Hello and welcome to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael, and I'm joined by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew Cottrell.
What up, what up?
That is the beginning of this podcast. Now, before we get into things, we're going to set a little context for, you know, kind of the overarching theme of what's going on with Nintendo. You know, obviously, as this pandemic thing is going on, it's having a lot of effects with the business practices of everybody, but Nintendo's not spared from this stuff. You know, every company seems like they're coming out like every few days and they're like, we have things to announce this year. We would like to let you know that a Sonic game will come out sometime, but we're not willing to commit to talking about it yet. And so I've seen a lot of those news articles fly around. Nintendo, of course, is having problems developing the Switch as components from factories in China are becoming scarce, and they were scarce even before the pandemic hit. So while Switches are near impossible to find on store shelves, we're here to talk about Switch stuff for, I guess, the few of you that have one. The Switch Lite is still on shelves, so there, you know, you can get those until you're Joy-Con starts drifting.
We're here to talk about all the Switch news that you may be missing out on due to the lack of Switches that are on shelves, but you know, hopefully this will hold you over.
For sure. So let's get into the roundup. Of course, the biggest news of the week just came today. We're recording this on Thursday night, and this morning, Paper Mario the Origami King was announced. Nintendo debuted this news through their YouTube channel that the newest entry of the Paper Mario series is hitting the Switch on July 17th. Matthew, what do you think?
You know, when I first looked at it, it looks really interesting. I think the presentation is immaculate. Like when it first started, the first cutscene where Mario's jumping out of the castle, the cinematic experience you get from that, it's really great. But for me personally, once I saw the game start being played and it was showing off some of the gameplay mechanics, specifically the battle mechanics, exploring the worlds, let's just say that I have paper thin expectations for it. Now,
got him.
Now here's the thing. Like I love Paper Mario, and you do as well. Paper Mario is something that's near and dear to our hearts. The first two or three games, anyway. For me personally, it's more so the first game, and you know, I'm actually playing through the second one for the first time ever right now. And it's a really fun game as well. But, you know, it seems like they really deviated from the standard formula with the fourth entry, specifically Paper Mario Sticker Star. Or it actually started with the third one in Super Paper Mario. I guess it just got less fun when it got to Sticker Star. And it's just strange because they seem to have gone with that formula ever since, you know, jumping into Color Splash, even though more people want to see a return to form from the original entries. And my disappointment lies in seeing that it seems to follow the formula, the one that's as of more recently, rather than the original one, with it looking like there may not be partners, the battle system looking like it, you know, what it used to be. I really like the world building that seems to be present in this game, though. Like, I think it's going to be really fun to explore the worlds, and that's something that I think could be really interesting, but overall, I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's interesting. I'm just curious when they were planning on originally announcing this game. Like, what were they originally planning on this being in that early 2020 Nintendo Direct? We eventually got this like mini Direct in May with in March rather, with a note that, you know, a bunch of games have been delayed because of this whole thing going on. And, you know, I wonder if it was supposed to be announced there or if it was supposed to be announced at E3. But it's weird that, you know, all we're seeing of the game is just basically the opening cinematic, 5 seconds of gameplay and 2 seconds of battle. It seems like a lot of the stuff that we saw that was looking cinematic, like Mario running from the castle, jumping, making an epic getaway, Peach being origami, that's probably like the first 15 minutes of the game. And then besides that, I don't think it bodes well for the game that we watched through a 2 minute trailer and we saw literally 2 seconds of the battle system. It's, it kind of strikes me as they're not particular, either they're not confident in it or they know the reaction that they're going to get if they show us that the battle system is just like Sticker Star and Color Splash, which I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb and say it's going to be Color Splash. I don't see any reason for them to bring back any sort of party system or sidekicks. It looks like you're going to have people accompany you on adventures, but it's just going to be Ba-Bomb, not, you know, Bombette, the one that accompanies you and has like, you know, like a family and a backstory and all that stuff. It's just going to be, this is Ba-Bomb, this is Toad, this is Spike. And, you know, I'm willing to wait that out, see how they go with it. I gotta say, from a personal perspective, I've never been so disappointed and excited about something at the same time. You know, I love the aesthetic as well. I think it's great presentation. It looks gorgeous on the Switch, and I love when Nintendo experiments with these different art styles like they have for Link's Awakening, Yoshi's Woolly World, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. Like, all of those are great new ways to experience a game and make them feel like lived in worlds that we can go and just sit in for a little while. But that same aesthetic was sort of present in the last two titles. You know, I think they did a great job with the graphics and the way that the world works and making the paper gimmicks really funny, but it seemed like they leaned a little too heavily on that in the last two games, and that was about as deep as they were, about as deep as a sheet of paper.
Yeah, know,
cause
well,
because they're paper, which is like most of the jokes in the game, which I found really funny. The last two games are hilarious, but the problems with them were that you didn't have an experience system. So getting into battles, you would have to, you know, fight enemies using cards or stickers, and you'd waste those stickers and you'd have to go and buy more at the shop, and all you would get for winning a battle was coins. And so it was just this constant thing where there's not really a reason to battle. So it just becomes this inconvenience, and without the story and the characters, all you've really got is the charming writing, the funny scenarios, and the paper jokes and puns, which, you know, makes for a pretty good game, but not a great game.
Yeah, well, and on the official website, it lists the game as an action-adventure, as what genres it's listed as. RPG is missing from that, which makes me feel like it, like you said, it's going to go more the direction of Color Splash than, you know, a return to form to the original titles, which, you know, and I want to touch on something you were talking about. The, you know, what we saw in the trailer is probably mostly just the first 15 minutes of the game, which is what makes me nervous too, because I feel like Nintendo has a way of using trailers to give you an idea of how a game's going to play out, even if that it completely deviates from that as the game progresses. Like Mario Tennis Aces is something that comes to mind with its story mode, where you got this idea that there was it was this big, grand, epic thing, and what you saw in the trailers was mostly just from like the first cutscene, you know, and there weren't really any other cutscenes in the story mode after that, and so it was kind of this false idea of what the story mode could have been, and ended up being completely different. So that's my fear for this as well, is that you know, and personally, I think that's why, you know, a lot of people theorize, oh, this was supposed to be included in a Nintendo Direct before, or I even saw somebody online say that this pretty much confirms a Nintendo Direct before this game's released, because they're going to want to spend time talking about it in detail. And I think that this was done purposefully, and I don't think it confirms a Direct at all, because I think it's one of those things that I think personally Nintendo probably doesn't have a ton of faith in it. And I feel like if they go into detail, they're going to end up alienating a lot of people, because it's going to be the formula that most fans are not a fan of. And that's going to potentially affect whether or not they purchase the game. And so I think there's a reason why Nintendo normally announces their games way ahead of time. And in this instance, they're announcing it less than 2 months ahead of time, and they're not really giving us any details. And or is it less than 2 months? It might be a little more than 2 months. I can't remember.
It's pretty much exactly 2 months.
Yeah. Okay. So 2 months exactly, just about. But I think that's why they're doing it, is it's just this thing that's fresh. It doesn't give you a lot of time to to break everything down and really analyze if you're going to want to buy the game or not. And especially if they never go into detail about it, you know, you're probably not going to put much thought into it. I think that's what they did with Super Mario Maker 2. And, you know, let's be honest, Super Mario Maker 2 is fun, but when it first came out, it was really shallow. I mean, up until recently where it got a huge DLC update, like that game felt like, I don't want to say empty, but just very...
It felt unfinished, which is the way that they release a lot of Switch games now. I mean, you think about what Kirby Star Allies had to offer at launch versus, you know, what it is now after getting all of those Dream Friend updates and, you know, back to Mario Tennis Aces. I was seeing footage of that the other day and I'm like, oh, Pauline's in the game. I didn't know that. I haven't touched that game in like a year. And, you know, while I don't know how I feel about that, I don't hate it, but I wish they'd be a little more honest about it up front. The thing that bothers me is that, you know, with like Mario Maker 2 and Aces, they're okay with like kind of promoting like, oh, there's a story mode. How much of a story mode? It's going to be a story mode 2 hours. And, you know, I think that's fine, but, you know, you just set the expectation. We got a little, like, 2-hour story mode, which, you know, is not how you market a game. And that's sort of the problem, is that from a marketing perspective, this is the best way that you could do it, because you're just showing off the best parts of the game, which is going to be the cutscenes and the paper puns and a paper machete. Is that what we call it? Paper mache.
Yeah,
paper machete. That's a different thing. A paper mache version of Donkey Kong and Samus's head. Like, you know, you've got stuff like that to really just give people a little taste. And you're like, all right, pre-order it. Comes out in 2 months. You want to be part of the wave, don't you? And Fallout 4 was really the first game to start this trend of a short marketing cycle. And it really worked for that game. It had a huge amount of hype. It sold really well. And, you know, by the time people kind of like decided that they liked the third one more or what have you, it you know, it already made its money. And so from a marketing perspective, yeah, this is great. And they're just announcing it in this void of nothingness while everybody else is like, we've got a Sonic game to announce, but we're scared of announcing it at the wrong time. So just keep posted. It's great to announce in that. And I mean, I don't want to be completely down on the game. I just want to sort of recalibrate expectations, because the response that I'm largely seeing on social media is like, this is awesome. This is going to be great. I see a little bit of Thousand Year Door in this. I'm like, what part of Thousand Year Door do you see in any of this, man? That there is a paper Mario in it. That's about it. And not that I'm saying that that's a bad thing. I hope that this game is, you know, even better than any of the other Paper Marios. But I'm not seeing it yet. I think that it has a lot of potential for great humor, great writing, and cool little scenarios that you find yourself in. But if they import or have the battle system influence from the other two games, then that's going to be sad, because at that point, the battles are pointless. I mean, they're a little fun for a while, and then you just realize that the only reason you're battling people is to get coins to buy the cards that you wasted in the battle. And so it's just this weird cycle where you don't really need to do it, and then you stop wanting to, and there's not much progression. You've unlocked like every move that Mario can do by the second chapter of the game, and you know, there's a lot of those issues that come with it. Not to mention, you were talking about a world to explore, but you know, my friend, you have not played Sticker Star and Color Splash. Those are stage based. Every world has stages like classic Mario, and you know, there's a little bit of room for exploration to move around in these, but they are, you know, largely linear experiences, and so. You roam around those worlds, and I almost would just prefer like an action RPG that where, you know, I jump on a Koopa or something like that, and I do 2 damage. Maybe I have to jump on him twice, and it just handle it in the overworld rather than a incredibly shallow battle system. But we'll see what they come up with. It just seems like the last few Paper Marios, they've been more focused on presentation over literally everything else.
Yeah, well, and I'm almost just curious as to why they keep deciding to go with this formula, because it seems like most people are interested in returning to the old style, and I don't understand why they're apprehensive about doing that when it would probably just result in the game being much, much more popular. Because you said you saw on social media a lot of positive reactions. I feel like I saw a lot of apprehensive ones where people are like, it looks like it could be cool, but I'm kind of nervous, and it's just strange. And, you know, I was looking at some sales numbers, and it looks like the last two games sold a lot better in Japan than they sold in some of the other territories. And we know how Nintendo seems to, like, if it's something that seems to do well in Japan, they're, for whatever reason, more interested in it. But overall, those games didn't really do well in terms of, you know, compared to the install base of the system. So it's a little strange. I'd be curious as to why they keep going in that direction, because I don't think Paper Mario works that well for, like, an action-style platformer. I just think, why not just make a normal Mario game at that point, you know? Like, what's honestly the difference? You know, and they keep leaning so heavily on this paper gimmick, and I think the only reason people thought Paper Mario was fun is that it's an RPG Mario game. That's why the first one was cool. You know, like, Super Mario RPG, nobody liked that game just because it had, like, a silicone art style, like Donkey Kong Country or anything. It was just Mario as an RPG, and it's kind of cool to step into a different genre. But I feel like Paper Mario now almost has an identity crisis, where it doesn't know what it wants to be, and so it ends up doing a bunch of different things, but all of them pretty shallow, you know? So,
yeah, and none of the Paper Marios outside of Super Paper Mario have sold like gangbusters, but, you know, like you were mentioning before, a lot of that has to do with the install base of the system that you're working with, and so a Paper Mario on the Wii is just going to do a lot better than the first two, which were on systems that didn't do as well, you know, compared to Nintendo's long lifetime of consoles. So it's always been kind of hard to measure what kind of Paper Mario works best, but there has been this long fan outcry for something that resembles the older games. And I don't know, man, I think they should take a page get it, because it's paper, out of Mario Odyssey's book, and, you know, take something that is old and revered and add a new twist to it. You know, take the battle system and some of the characterization from the original game, and then do your crazy paper stuff, because from a presentation standpoint, it's awesome. I love the cutscenes, I love the camera angles, I love the writing of these new games, but, you know, just throw a couple of characters in there, a different kind of plot, a new world to explore, rather than it's the Mushroom Kingdom, but now there's stickers. It's the Mushroom Kingdom, but now there's paint. And, you know, just iterate on that. So, I'm excited for the game. Despite saying all of this, I just have to sort of qualify my statement here. I'm excited for the game. I really like that Bowser, it looks like he's going to be involved in the story without just being at the beginning and then the end. And I really appreciate that. Bowser's an awesome character that's criminally underrepresented in the series. You basically just run into him at the beginning of the game and the end of the game, and that's all they use him for. But as we've seen in games like Bowser's Inside Story or the original Super Mario RPG, Bowser can bring a lot to the table with his comedic character. And I'm glad that they're bringing him back in some sense. You know, maybe it'll be kind of a buddy cop movie. It looks like you're working with Bowser Jr. I like those adjustments. That could be a lot of fun. The game, of course, looks gorgeous. I think I'm going to laugh a lot when I play it. But, you know, it just depends on, can they get that battle system right? Which, you know, it's based on this, like, ring grid. Maybe there's a little bit of tactics to it. But I think the problem is it's hard to make an RPG interesting when it's turn-based, when there's only one character. And that's why, you know, those sort of games go for more of an action RPG angle. So I don't know. Maybe they feel like if they made that Paper Mario game where you're just jumping and using your hammer in the overworld, maybe that would cannibalize 2D Zelda. I don't know. I don't think it would, but I would enjoy that kind of Paper Mario. But this is the one that we're getting. We'll see how it goes. And I mean, I guess the last thought that I have on this is that I just looked at this and I kind of laughed and realized that this is just another game in a very long chain of games where there's fan feedback given, and it's just, it falls on deaf ears. I feel like you look at games like the Pokemon series, you look at games like this, that, you know, people had a somewhat negative response to Sticker Star, and you can definitely see it in the reviews at the time too, that they suffered a little bit on the critical end of things with those games, that there's a lot of fan feedback that comes and a lot of suggestions, a lot of things that we'd like to work on. And in most series, it just kind of falls on deaf ears. And while I respect sticking to your guns and, you know, believing in yourself and trusting your heart, the third time, maybe it's time to, maybe it's time to listen to some feedback. I mean, you know, it's like, I respect the guys who made Super Smash Brothers Brawl and being confident in their decision, or just like, man, we're going to put tripping in this game and that's what we believe in. But, you know, sometimes you're off, and that's okay. And it's okay to listen to your fans. After all, they're the people that are planning on buying it. But that's my last thought. And you got anything else, Matthew?
Not too much. I mean, I'd say the same thing. I think the reason sometimes feedback is heard more, I guess, in certain other scenarios is because I think with Pokemon specifically, it was so, the reaction was so visceral that I think they were looking at it more so like, you know, we have the potential to lose customers if we don't try to start, you know, remedying the situation. And they haven't, but I think that's why they started issuing apologies or statements on the game or what have you. And I think with Paper Mario, it's just a shame, I'll say, because I think anything on the Switch has the potential to do really, really well. And to me, this would be the perfect opportunity where if you made a Paper Mario game, the type that most people remember so fondly loving, you know, I just think it would have the opportunity to easily be the most profitable game in the series and just set you up for long-term and sustained success. So, but, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think with Mario, they're willing to swing and miss sometimes because at the end of the day, it's Mario and they're not going to stop making Mario games. It's not like a lot of Nintendo's other IPs where a bad game can result in either them not making games for it anymore or them just not revisiting it for years. So, you know, I think with Mario, they're willing to try different things, see if it works. And if it does, you know, that bodes better for them.
Which, I'm glad that they do that, but it's weird how a lot of times they'll get into rhythms where they just keep making the same game at the same time, you know, with these, if this is just like Color Splash and Sticker Star, that'll be the third game in a row that's largely indistinguishable from the other ones. But it looks like this one is going to be a little more unique compared to those two. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And, you know, even the Mario and Luigi series got a little stale and they just started doing like kind of the same thing over and over again. And, you know, the Alpha Dream, the people making that eventually went under. And so who knows if we even get another Mario and Luigi game, which is just, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. And it's just, it's wacky. It's wacky how Nintendo will often, you know, they'll throw out a new game like ARMS, but then make the third Paper Mario in a row. That's just kind of like the same sort of thing. But, I'm going to keep my hopes high. We'll see how it turns out. I'm excited to play it and give it its fair shake. Promise I won't go into it holding anything against it. I'm just crossing my fingers for a good battle system. And for what it's worth, I did enjoy Color Splash. I played it from beginning to end. I quite enjoyed the writing and the scenarios that they had there. But, you know, all those problems, I enjoyed it despite all those problems, and I didn't enjoy it because of the battle system or anything like that. The last thing I'll say about this is it's very weird how this happened a day after everyone posted their Xenoblade coverage. So it seemed like there was some sort of like preview embargo for Xenoblade where like there was a few YouTube videos that went up and websites like Eurogamer and the like just posted their preview coverage for Xenoblade. And this just sucked all the air out of the room, man. I'm like, Xeno, what? I'm like going back to the article. Just, man, that poor game. It comes out in a week and a half, and they just sucked all the air out of the room with this Paper Mario stuff. Because with the Paper Mario confirmation comes the other Mario rumors, which we'll get into in a little bit. But let's move on to the next news story. This will be a much quicker one. Star Wars Episode I Racer has been delayed. This is, of course, the remastering of the old N64 game. Games are getting delayed left and right because of the virus. But I found this particular instance interesting because the developer Aspyr, I guess is how you pronounce it, announced the delay mere hours before the game was supposed to release on the eShop. I just found that hilarious. They announced this via a tweet. About 12 hours before the game came out, they're like, yeah, no, sorry, Bob was supposed to do this, but he couldn't get his computer to work at home.
I don't even understand how that happens, to be honest. Like, because when you delay something, you probably have an idea of how much longer it's going to take for you to release it. And to delay it the same day, I mean, you would think that means that the game's basically done, but something happened because they were getting ready to release it. But that's odd.
It's weird. And also, they're porting an N64 game, and it's not like they're redoing the graphics or anything. They're just kind of making it work on the Switch, like a la Virtual Console. So it's weird. And I mean, these guys have had a multi-decade history of porting things to systems. So they're responsible for the Mac versions of a lot of huge games, from like Call of Duty to a lot of these Star Wars spin-off games. Like, they did Jedi Outcast on the Switch and other systems a few months back. And so, I mean, yeah, it's just, there's a story there that we're not hearing about, but I just thought it was funny.
What's the what's the name of the company that's doing the port again?
Aspyr.
I wonder if they're the people who ported Ark Survival Evolved. That was that dinosaur like hunting and survival game. But the reason I say that is that I know there's a company that's notorious for a lot of ports where they're able to make even like really games that shouldn't work that well on a system work really well. So if they're the people in charge of that, then I would have a lot of confidence that it would turn out well. But that's a little troubling, especially when, like you said, it's essentially just putting an N64 game on the Switch, which you wouldn't even think is that difficult to begin with. But who knows? Maybe there's some problem with Disney, the Death Star, aka.
Yeah, Ark was a different one. That was I think Abstraction Games, but Aspyr, the only Switch games they've done are the Jedi Outcast, Jedi Academy. They did Civilization. I mean, they've got some big games under their belt. They've worked with all sorts of companies, and they made their name in the early days by porting a lot of PC games to Mac. So, yeah, it's just there's a story there. I would love to know one day, like, what happened. I think they probably, like, just, you know, it's probably a small team that's porting this game, and I don't know, just someone missed the Slack message to announce the delay.
Right.
Like, oh no. Gosh. Next news story. There is some Smash speculation that we have to cover. So there is a Twitter account, Rayman for Smash, which, you know, I know seems a little bit biased, but there's a person there sort of gathering information that may or may not point to the inclusion of Rayman being in Smash. But recently there was a development where a Smashboards user by the name of T Animal saw some recent copyright revisals for Rayman, indicating that some deal was struck between Ubisoft and a third party company. Now, this could mean a game company like Nintendo. This could mean a merchandise company. This could mean the TV series that's supposed to be in production for Rayman. So they could be a bunch of different things, but something is happening with the Rayman intellectual property. And we saw something similar happen with Banjo-Kazooie before his inclusion in Smash. So what do you think about this, Matthew? I know you've been following this situation.
Well, I can tell you I'm really excited. It makes me really optimistic. Like, Crash Bandicoot and Rayman are probably my two most wanted third-party characters. Like, at this point, Smash almost doesn't feel complete without them, because I feel like they're the two last big-time third-party iconic characters. You know, having Crash in there would kind of encapsulate the console wars between Mario, Crash, and Sonic. And then I think Rayman was just among the, you know, I mean, he's Ubisoft's original mascot. So just yeah, at that point, you would pretty much fulfill all of that. But, you know, according to another Rayman account called Rayman Together, he actually kind of detailed the specific conditions of the trademark. And there's four bullet points here. One is that it's mentioning a game. Two is that it's mentioning an online ongoing service. Three is that it's mentioning a television series. And four, it's that it's mentioning an educational slash entertainment services. So, you know, we already know that there's supposed to be a Rayman TV show coming. So, that third bullet point makes sense there. But I think the most interesting one is the online ongoing service. Because if that doesn't scream Smash, I don't know what does. I mean, unless they're making a new game with Rayman in it that has some sort of online play, that could obviously be something. But I just think...
But it would have to be with a third party.
Yeah, so
it couldn't be, you know, it couldn't be like, say, the service that was in Rayman Legends for the challenges.
Yeah, so I know that this is something that needs to be taken with a huge grain of salt, but I think, you know, it's... You know, when a lot of people were really convinced that Banjo was getting in after the similar trademarks popped up, I think the same thing for Rayman, and it just makes so much sense. I mean, you know, like, I think Crash Bandicoot is almost a shoe-in, too, just because of, the type of character that he is and how highly requested he is in all territories. But the one thing I'll say is, you know, I know Nintendo and Activision have a great relationship, but at the end of the day, it's Activision, and... You know, they couldn't even figure out how to get Crash Bandicoot in PlayStation All-Stars when he's literally the PlayStation All-Star, or Spyro, which is arguably the second biggest one. So I have a little less faith in Activision, but Ubisoft and Nintendo are so close now, you know, and with allowing Ubisoft to make a Mario game, essentially a Mario strategy game, and then allowing them to basically make a Star Fox game, because Starlink, you know, it didn't do all that well all over, just because it was a toys to life game that I think that idea was done a few years too late. It was really expensive, which I think alienated customers as well. But the interesting thing about it is that the Switch version accounted for over 80% of sales of that game, if I'm not mistaken. So like, people who bought that game were clearly interested in, you know, the Star Fox aspect. And so, it shows that Nintendo and Ubisoft have a good, healthy relationship. And I just think it'd be a missed opportunity if he wasn't there. But I just also think it makes so much sense that both sides would want to get a deal done. And, you know, like I said, I would love to have Rayman in Smash.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a possibility. You know, he was... important enough to be one of the few third-party characters that was included in some sense in the spirit mode that was in the game. Also, we had the recent announcement of costumes from Ubisoft, and we got an Assassin's Creed. I mean, if Ubisoft was going to have a character in one of these games, it would either be Assassin's Creed or Rayman. And with Assassin's Creed sort of off the table, with there being a Mii costume of the character, it points a little more toward Rayman, and you got to think that Ubisoft is going to have some character in this game. I mean, we're talking about a company that just in the last few years had the rights to use not only Mario, but also Star Fox, two of Miyamoto's most prized possessions. So from a standpoint of trust that they're going to do well by their characters and their brand, it's there. I mean, and not to mention that Ubisoft is a partner that Nintendo wants to keep in the, you know, close to them, because they bring a lot of popular third-party games to their system, and they're always willing to work hard with Nintendo to make things work on their system.
Well, we also
so it's an important partnership. It's a character that makes sense, highly requested. I mean, I think all the pieces are there, and my current theory for this is that Rayman was supposed to be announced at E3, but now that E3 is canceled, they are saying that the first Fighters Pass character is going to be an ARMS character. Now, the funny thing about it is that when they announced that, they didn't have any trailer to show. They didn't have any visual aids. They just said, someone's coming from ARMS. We'll tell you later. And it just tells me that, like, whatever they had planned did not go according to plan. And like, it points to a different character being the actual first of the Fighters Pass, and ARMS, them putting an ARMS character being something like, okay, we got to put something out, but, you know, with this virus business, we can't fly to Paris, we can't fly anybody from Ubisoft to Japan to work out any sort of super important details. Person-to-person meetings are super important in Japan, and, you know, all the pieces there are to suggest that, you know, whatever character was supposed to be announced first probably wasn't. I can't imagine from a marketing perspective that the first character that they would put at the beginning of something that they want you to buy in bulk would be something as minor as an ARMS character, which isn't to say that, you know, ARMS is like not important or whatever, but, you know, it's not of the same cut from the same cloth as someone from like, say, Crash Bandicoot or Rayman, or, you know, really any third party character that would generate a lot of extra buzz for the downloadable pack. So I could see it happening. I don't feel like I have any real horses in the race. I would be thrilled to have Rayman the character in the game. I feel like he definitely fits and belongs with the cast, but also, I wouldn't be devastated if it didn't happen, but it does seem like it's very possible.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, we also forgot that Ubisoft also did, they used the Donkey Kong property to make the DLC for the Mario & Rabbids game, so they've really handled three different properties from Nintendo, and I feel like, man, that's just, if that doesn't speak to trust in having faith in a company and a brand, then I don't know what does. And I also think, you know, some people think that an Assassin's Creed character has a chance of making it in, because even on the Assassin's Creed Mii costume, there was there was like a specific name that was mentioned with the costume, and some people think, okay, maybe that means they're actually planning on doing this character. But I just think, you know, Assassin's Creed's already so popular, and I think Ubisoft's been looking to find a way to revitalize Rayman. And that, to me, just makes more business sense. I think Rayman fits better in Smash. He's way more iconic than any specific character from Assassin's Creed. And I think Assassin's Creed doesn't need any help getting put back on the map right now. And Rayman kind of does, you know? Like, it went through a mini resurgence, and now I think it's kind of in that purgatory territory. And I just think Ubisoft would be crazy if they didn't want to get a character in Smash. And I just think he obviously makes the most sense. And then also the fact that he's not a costume. Like, they did a Rabbids costume, Assassin's Creed costume. You'd think a Rayman costume would just make total sense. And they didn't do that. And so, I feel really good about it. I think there's a really good chance that it's going to happen. And I kind of told you my theory is that they're going to have the ARMS trailer. They're going to have the ARMS character being shown. And it's going to be kind of like the Ken Incineroar trailer, where it's going to show Ken off for a little bit. And then the main attraction is going to be Rayman that comes out, because Rayman's kind of like an ARMS character. And I just think that would, just how like Ken and Incineroar are both fighters, you know? And so I think that'd be really funny and interesting, but you know, we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But I'm really optimistic about it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I could definitely see that trailer playing out in my head. But yeah, hopefully Rayman's in Smash, or if not, Shovel Knight is. That's that's always been my pick, but I know he's kind of off the table now. But anyway, next news story. Illumination's Super Mario movie reportedly is still on schedule, thanks to a Deadline article where sources close to the matter have reported that the last 2 months have been really productive on not only the Super Mario Brothers movie, but also a new Minions movie and a Sing sequel. So this was also confirmed by Nintendo's recent financial briefing that the title is still due by 2022. So that's it's interesting, the difference in how this is hitting different teams. You know, from the animation studio perspective, studios like Pixar and DreamWorks, the really big ones, have these vast corporate offices, as you'd imagine, where they do a lot of their work. So they haven't been able to adapt as well. But smaller ones like Illumination have been able to thrive in this environment, as they had work from home measures in place before any of this hit. And that really brings in an interesting discussion to how it's hitting a lot of the Japanese teams, as work from home isn't as popular a trend there. So it's who knows if the Mario games are going to hit on time this year, but the Mario movie is going to. That's which has got to be a nightmare. I mean, the people who are planning out the marketing have to be pulling out their hair because they're trying to capitalize on the popularity of the movie with the Universal Park that's opening up, with the Nintendo games and, you know, a smartphone app and all that stuff. And it, gosh, I can't imagine what their job is like right now.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably one of the big reasons why the production is still going through, or they're probably doing as much as they can do, because they probably want to have that movie ready to go before that Universal Studios park is opened. And so, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's going to slow down the production of video games this year anyway. And let's be honest, Nintendo usually doesn't announce games too far out anyway. So, I mean, as it relates to games, I don't really think they usually don't tell us about what's 2 or 3 years down the road anyway. So I would think everything that's supposed to be done this year is probably going according to plan. Because I know a lot of times, like, games usually wrap up production or can wrap up production like months in advance. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we, you know, if everything that's supposed to come out this year still shows up on time.
Yeah, there's definitely that period where a game goes gold and they need a few months to manufacture all the cases and discs or cartridges in Nintendo's case. But everybody's just kind of had that asterisk by all their game releases that they might be delayed because of this outbreak. And, you know, some people are holding on to their games because they can't deliver on the stock, the physical retail that they want around launch to make sure that it's a big and successful launch. Other companies, I mean, you know, obviously Animal Crossing is just doing crazy numbers. It has already shot up the charts to be one of the most successful Nintendo Switch titles ever in its, you know, now 2 months on the market. And, you know, so there's a, it seems like this is the right time to release a game, but I don't know, everybody's just kind of holding on and they're not really sure what this is going to look like. And I think what this is going to prove is that you don't need to wait until E3 to announce 6 games at the same time. Just tell us like a month and a half before the game comes out what it's about, get us excited for it, and we're probably going to have a much different preview cycle going forward than what we've previously had, where we hear about these games way too far in advance. My favorite being the announcement is, we are working on a Pokemon title. It's like, oh, well, in other news, the sky is also blue today.
Yeah, well, you know, Metroid Prime 4 is probably the most notorious for that. And even the Breath of the Wild sequel, I didn't really feel like that announcement was necessary, but I feel like they probably felt like their E3 presentation last year was a little lacking. And so I think that's probably why they wanted to throw something like that in there, which is ironic because there's a lot of people who feel like last year's E3 presentation was good. And I am kind of the mindset that I feel like Nintendo is. I don't feel like there was much there. It seemed like it was just a bunch of RPGs, 2 Smash character announcements, and then that. I can't really remember what else was in that presentation that was really, what should I say? Eye-popping. Noteworthy.
And that's, who knows if they would have had that problem this year. You know, I think Smash is always going to have some new character or something, so that always props up the shows a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, a distinct lack of bangers this year, for sure. I mean, Animal Crossing really kicked off the year right, but that was a game that was originally, I believe, supposed to hit last holiday season, and it got pushed back to this time, which is probably the best thing that ever happened to it. I mean, it's really hilarious how these different events can make or break a game. There's so many external circumstances that game companies try to exercise control over but can't, and these wacky situations end up where, you know, this is the most popular Animal Crossing ever. It's already beaten a bunch of first party Switch titles that have been out for a year or 2 years in terms of raw sales. And you know, we're just getting started with it. And I think it's largely because of the type of game it was, the time that it hit, the unique situation that we're in. And it's just, it's fascinating to watch, but it does leave questions for their portfolio going forward and what they're planning for this year. I mean, it sounds like we're probably not going to get a mainline Pokemon game this year. A lot of people are speculating remakes of Generation 4, but I can't see the Pokemon company launching DLC for Sword and Shield in September and then launching a new game in November. I just can't really see that happening.
Well, we know what franchise is making a return to fill the void. We all know. It was in the at the end of the Paper Mario trailer today, and I'm not talking about Samus. I'm talking about Donkey Kong.
No, yeah, some people think that a 2D Metroid is coming, which
here's the thing, man. At the end of the Paper Mario trailer, you get a Samus helmet. There's a 2D Metroid that's being rumored, but we also know that Metroid Prime is well in development. But we also got Donkey Kong there, and you know, I've mentioned to you this a million times, Michael. Donkey Kong doesn't normally appear in more story-driven or mainline series Mario titles, although I guess Paper Mario would be considered kind of a spin-off anyway. But anywho, I got a feeling we might something.
I don't think DK has been referenced in a Mario RPG game, even as a parody, since the original.
Yeah, just like the Chained Kong is supposed to be the reference, but yeah.
I mean, you know, of course, Mario plus Rabbit's got that DK expansion, but yeah, besides those two things, not even like a passing reference. Maybe there's a few that are in writing that jokingly refer to like the olden days when DK stole Peach, but yeah, it's interesting that's in there. And, you know, I think the way that the trailer was cut, I think it was supposed to start a direct, like the direct opens, they play that trailer, and then at the end of it, it shows that Samus thing is just like, speaking of Samus, we've got an update for Metroid Prime 4. Expect it by 2030.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, and I honestly believe it is strange, and I guess this can be sort of the speculation part of the show, because we love our speculation, but I'll just say really quickly, I think it is interesting that the trailer rolls, you get all the way to essentially the credits, you could say, well, where it's just a screen with the title on it, and usually that's where trailers end, but then after that, that's when they cut to that little part with the helmet, and you know, it's strange. It feels like something they wouldn't need to do. It didn't really, I mean, other than like a funny nod or an Easter egg, but you think typically you would save that for people to find in the actual game. Like that's when Easter eggs are best served, no pun intended. You know, you don't want to find out about a cool cameo through a trailer, you know, especially one if it ends up being pointless. But it's really interesting because it could also be just a reference to Retro Studios, since that's kind of the two properties that they had been, working on. But
that is an interesting note.
Yeah, well, and I'll say this: there was somebody who worked for Retro Studios who I think was some sort of artistic director or music director, something of the sort. But he actually said that I think he left the company in 2018. But he said before he left, there was a game that was nearing completion. And so he was kind of surprised when they took over Metroid Prime 4, but also said it's not outside the realm of possibility that they could be working on two different things. So who knows, man? You know, and that's just a quick little tidbit. But I would not be surprised if that's a subtle hint at something, because, you know, we're huge fans of the Donkey Kong franchise. I've been hearing rumblings from some people who have sources that you know, Nintendo plans to bring DK back in a big way. And, you know, they're obviously dedicating a part of the Universal Studios park to the franchise, which, if you know how much those parks cost, you would think, okay, they obviously want to do something with this brand. They're not just going to let it fall to the wayside. And we obviously know Metroid's already coming back, so I think that reference makes sense as well. But it'll be interesting to see if that actually develops into something, or your theory, like maybe that was supposed to lead to a Metroid announcement and maybe a DK announcement. But it makes me excited. I'll probably be severely disappointed when it's not, but it's wishful thinking.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And yeah, there's just so much that's up in the air right now with the way that every different country and company is responding to this, and you know, we'll see what how it affects the portfolio going forward. Next news item, Pokemon has moved its VGC and TGC tournaments online in light of coronavirus. So in an update on Pokemon.com, tournaments for the Pokemon trading card game, Pokken Tournament, and Pokemon Sword and Shield have made their way into an online format. For Sword and Shield, there's going to be a international event where you can battle against people and qualify for a worldwide tournament that's going to happen in July and August. For the trading card game, they're going to take your rankings through there. And I don't know exactly what they're doing with Pokken Tournament, but I'm glad they're still supporting that in some sense. It's really cool that they're doing that. And the best part about this is that even if you're not a competitive Pokemon battler, they are going to be broadcasting some of these battles, which will be cool. And so I got to say, I'm into it. I wish they gave more advance notice for the Sword and Shield tournament. It's going to happen May 24th through the 24th to the 26th, I believe. And, you know, that just about gives you a week and some change to come up with a party. And it looks like there's more Pokemon that are legal now than were legal in the previous VGC format. And this is frustrating to us because we were ready for the VGC tournament that was going to hit the Southeast, and then they canceled it. And while I'm, you know, very, very excited for the chance to compete in some sense, this is not giving me a whole lot of lead time here.
Yeah, it is cool that they're making adjustments, though, period. You know, and this Pokemon's a perfect game to offer online tournaments for, you know. It's you know, you don't have to worry about input delay or anything like that in, you know, it's... Like I said, it's the perfect game to take up that mantle and offer that option, as opposed to another major Nintendo title that won't be featured in a major online tournament anymore.
Which leads us into our next story. EVO 2020 will replace its scheduled Las Vegas event with 5 weeks of online tournaments. It announced its lineup via its YouTube channel, and with this trailer comes the notable omission of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, the best-selling fighting game of all time and EVO's most popular game in terms of entrance. Speculation has ensued, wondering if the decision to drop the game was made by Nintendo or EVO, or some combination of the two, but this will be the first time the franchise is absent from the long-running fighting game tournament since 2013.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was trying to... I had something else I was going to add to that, but you made me forget! But yeah, it's an interesting decision. And that's why I was saying, like, Pokemon's the perfect one to offer that because you don't have to worry about any of those things. Super Smash Bros., on the other hand, is notorious for its poor online experience. And, you know, it's something I don't think Nintendo really has any interest or plan on changing because I've read more up on the whole netcode situation. It sounds like it would actually be a more complicated and difficult process to alter at this point. But, you know, it's to me, like, let's be honest, Nintendo's never been interested in the competitive scene of Super Smash Bros. In the first place, regardless. So I don't think they really care if it's not featured at EVO. I mean, I don't think they look at it as an opportunity for them to make the game more popular or for them to make any money from it. And so I don't think they really care. I mean, people always criticize Nintendo for not getting in on the competitive scene. And I'm like, well, if they're not interested in participating, then do they really care if their game's not featured at EVO, which is a shame. I wish Smash, you know, it's I think Smash is the most popular competitive game from a streaming standpoint and from an entrance standpoint, and from tournaments being held standpoint.
Yeah, it is, but from an entrance standpoint, there's I think by about almost a 2-to-1 margin in 2019.
Well,
we're talking about 3,500 entrants in the Las Vegas EVO, as opposed to the next highest, which I think was like 1,900.
Yeah, well, and I'm saying just in tournaments that people hold, period, across the country, or like majors in general, because a lot of venues will do that have Smash besides EVO will do other fighting games, and it seems like Smash is always by far the most popular. And then you look at Twitch numbers for streaming these tournaments; Smash usually blows the other ones out of the water as well, and it's just a shame that Nintendo doesn't have any interest on moving that scene forward. And that's, you know, evident here in the online experience as well. I think they're more interested in selling the game and selling DLC and as long as people continue to do that, I mean, why do they need to spend time and money fixing the online experience when at the end of the day, you're still playing it, you're still buying it, you know, until it affects them financially, I don't think they really care.
Yeah, I mean, this is a long running history, and it's interesting that this is the first time that Smash has been absent since 2013, which was the same year that after the Melee community raised almost $100,000 for breast cancer research, they almost were blocked by Nintendo. Nintendo was legally threatening the venue and, you know, just that whole shakeup. And eventually they made the right decision to let the tournament happen, which just transformed Melee from this like niche thing that was happening into a competitive mainstay. Even, you know, it would run alongside the new Smash games. It's they've had this long history of just not really supporting the competitive scene, and they're dipping their toes in it. But compared to other fighting games and even other just tournaments run like Pokemon, I mean, the Pokemon company runs their own international event where they fly players around the world to compete in these amazing tournaments. They've been running that thing for years and years and years, and they support the trading card game, even obscure games like Pokken, and of course compared to the mainline series games. And when it comes to Super Smash Brothers, Nintendo's always just been a little bit skittish about supporting it. And Evo 2020 in Japan, the ultimate prize was almost just a pro controller. I mean, you know, and when asked about it, the Nintendo was basically just saying, like, it's great that we can compete without the need for prize money or like competing over money. It's just like, but that's also what lets people chase the craft. If there's no money at the end of it, then you can't spend, you know, a full work week practicing Super Smash Brothers to entertain people. And it seems like history is just taking its course and bringing Nintendo along with it, that eventually they're going to care about making this work, but they're just they're so far behind in the online game and the netcode game. And so you got to think this is the problem due to like watching some of the other online Smash tournaments that are happening, and it's really like changing the meta, and there's a lot of issues with lag and some disconnects, and it's a shame that this is now the best-selling fighting game. The previous holder of that crown was Street Fighter II, which had approximately 55 different versions of it on every different system. To think that there's a fighting game that's this successful, this popular, this approachable, and they don't put that extra oomph in it is really just a sad missed opportunity. And, you know, I think with Nintendo, we've just come to expect some sort of catch when it comes to the online functionality of any game, whether it's the restrictive matchmaking of Splatoon 2 or the terrible UI in Pokemon Sword and Shield raid battles, or my favorite example, four-player Mario Maker making an 8-bit game run at like 12 frames a second. And they never fixed Mario Maker. They don't need to, because they're going to sell their copies anyway, and there's just enough of a base. They're just like, oh, that's Nintendo.
Well,
and I just really hope that this... could this be the straw that breaks the camel's back? No, probably not. But, you know, maybe if this gets buzz, it's going to reach the right ears. And Nintendo, they recently expressed the desire to improve the online experience. And I hope that they're hearing this and that they're consulting with the right firms and that they can bring some nice changes. But this, it's just kind of sad to see, because there's other Super Smash Brothers online tournaments that are exceeding 8,000 entrants per tournament. There's just a wide base to connect with. And I to think that there's no Nintendo supported circuit for Smash is really just a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Well, especially, what was I going to say? Ah, darn it. I think I lost my train of thought again. But yeah, it's like what you're saying. It's just so... you just look at all the other games. That's what I was going to say. I mean, when you look at Fortnite, for example, and how, you know, for Fortnite players, like, you win a tournament, and I mean, you can win, I think, like $1 million or something crazy like that. And it's wild, because Smash is even more popular than Fortnite in terms of, like, people watching and... You know, I mean, it's wild, you know, and I think if Nintendo did get involved, it would only grow everything exponentially, because I feel like that's how a lot of those other games have grown. And I just feel like they're not exploiting the gift that Smash is, or what Smash is giving them, because it's really their only competitive game. You know, like Mario Kart's not really competitive. ARMS is not really competitive. Pokken Tournament is, I mean, I guess they have tournaments for that, but does anybody honestly really play that? I mean, there's some people.
Pokken Tournament is, you know, that's again, there's a bit of a distinction between Nintendo and the Pokemon Company. The Pokemon Company is supporting a lot of their games in an official format, and that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, the ironic thing is that they're trying to get into it, and I hope it's just that they're trying to, you know, take the slow and steady approach and not to, you know, overextend themselves. Like, you know, we're gonna see what happens, but I hope that they see that this is in part what's helping Ultimate be so successful, in part what made Splatoon so successful, and something that could have made ARMS more successful if there was a vibrant tournament scene for it. And you just hope. You hope that they're going to, you know, start to make the right decisions, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Not going to hold my breath. So that is the end of the roundup. And the last bit of breaking news I'm seeing as I'm just looking at Nintendo blogs and the like is that there's a new rumor saying that the 3D Mario remasters and Pikmin 3 Deluxe are ready for release soon. So let's get into this.
Welcome to Bonus Stage.
So here we are in Bonus Stage, where we take a question and just kind of dive deep into the topic. So for this show, what does the announcement of Paper Mario say about the rumors of Mario's 35th anniversary, the 3D remasters, and all of that jazz? To give a little context, I think it was Eurogamer who originally reported on it, but a bunch of other outlets have either corroborated or reposted it, showing a bit of confidence in this being true. In some sense, that some sort of Paper Mario game was happening. Originally, the rumor was that it was going to be a return of form. We're seeing that that's obviously not the case. We're seeing that we're hearing remake and remaster for Mario's 35th anniversary, specifically Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, and maybe Mario Galaxy 2. There's some outlets that are assuming that's true and some that are not confident in confirming that yet, but I think we're getting something of the like happening here, and the terms remake and remaster are very muddled and just kind of used as marketing buzzwords that they don't really mean anything concrete. And so let's indulge in a little bit of speculation here, Matthew. What do you think is happening with this Mario 35th anniversary business?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say because I don't see Nintendo going back and remastering the games. I know a lot of people think that, but I mean, Nintendo's so big on re-releasing existing games. And I think on their part, it's, you know, not to sound any type of way, but I feel like it's almost a little lazy, but it's an easy profit. You know, like, that's kind of been their bread and butter for years. I mean, it's just to re-release you the same games you've been playing since you were a kid, you know? Because I can't count how many times the same Super Nintendo and NES games have been announced over and over and over again. Now, the outlier here would be Super Mario Sunshine. That hasn't had a re-release, but I feel like I could see them porting the game. But it's also a little strange, too, because I feel like if they did actually remaster the games, I don't think Nintendo would include more than one game as a package because, I mean, this is the same company that will sell a port for a full price, you know? And so I'm like, if they're actually remastering the games, like giving them new and improved graphics and things like that, I can't see them selling them as package deals. So I feel like this rumor is kind of like the Paper Mario thing, where I think some of it's true, but I think some of it is a stretch, you know? And I think it sounds too good to be true that they're going to go back and remaster every single 3D Mario game that's come before it. Like I said, if there's some sort of port that they do for each game, I could see something like that happening where they just put them on the system. But, you know, because like I said, they like re-releasing the same games over and over again. But it's just hard to imagine them doing anything more than that, especially all at once. You know, like, that just feels like something you could release the remaster of Super Mario 64 now, and then next year do Sunshine, and then the year after that do Galaxy, and then Galaxy 2. You know, like, it seems like it's almost like overkill, so to speak, if you just threw that all out at once. I mean, people seem to be really excited for it, you know, for the idea of that, but I don't know. That's just my personal take on it. I just, based on history, I don't buy it completely.
Yeah, well, here's my thought. I think we're getting all three games in a package, in a singular package. I'm going to disagree with you there, but here's the way I would slice it. I don't think we're getting a true remaster of any of the games. I think we're getting upscaled ports. We're not going to get something along the... And here's my little gripe. Let me just have a brief aside here on the word remaster. It's entirely useless. Remaster means nothing when it comes to games. It could mean anything from, like, the Insane Trilogy from Crash to Mario Power Tennis coming to the Wii and just having terrible controls and slightly better graphics. Or, like, you know, you remember Jungle Beat being moved to the Wii, and that was like some sort of remaster. And, or, like, you know, you even look at Luigi's Mansion on the DS, that, you know, a decade and a half later, it looks worse on a new system than it did on the GameCube. Remaster means nothing. And I think what people are hearing is that we're getting these games on the Switch, and it's not Virtual Console, so that counts as like a remaster. I mean, I think they're gonna display well on an HD TV, but that's about all we're getting with it. Maybe a couple of extra features that have something to do with the portability of the Switch, HD Rumble or something like that. But I don't think we're getting anything special when it comes to these games. I think they're just gonna be essentially ported a la Super Mario All-Stars that we got on the Super Nintendo and then later on the Wii. Just a collection of some select Mario games, and the novelty will be there because now they're portable and they weren't before, and that'll be that. The reason I think they're bundling them into one package rather than the Virtual Console or something, or just selling them, you know, sort of piecemeal on there, is because if they sell them one piece at a time on the console, they're going to get some people to dip, but other people are just going to play Mario Galaxy on the Wii U. They're just going to dust that thing off to play it, or, you know, just play it on the original Wii that they might have. But one of those games is probably going to grab them. Like, you sold your copy of Sunshine, or your N64 doesn't work, and they're going to be packaged together in this nice little package for the low price of $60. That's kind of a sarcastic joke. But, you know, if they were to sell all of those on Virtual Console, you'd probably be paying, you know, $10 for Mario 64. You'd be paying $20 for each of the Mario Galaxies, assuming both of them will come to that collection, which I do think will happen. And then maybe like a $15 price point for Mario Sunshine, which brings you to $65. But, you know, a lot of other people just wouldn't be interested in playing all those games. They buy one or the other. And so I think they're going to sell them as a package to create more interest, which lines up with the strategy that they've had lately, where they'll package classic games inside of a larger bundle to get you to kind of upsell you on something else. You know, if they were to do NES or Super Nintendo games on a Virtual Console for the Switch, you'd buy the handful of games that you are nostalgic for and want on a new system and be done with it. But if they can get you to commit to a plan where they're charging you every year for access to these games and you never really keep them, then, you know, that's a bigger win for them. Likewise, if they get you to buy an NES Classic or a Super Nintendo Classic, I mean, you know, you might have just been looking for two of those games, but now they've got you buying a $60 or an $80, you know, piece of technology just to get access to them. And for some of those things, they are the best versions of those games, sporting perfect pixel mode or different viewing options. And I think that's what we're going to see here, is just these definitive ports of the games. And, you know, maybe that's all people are looking for, but I feel like all the buzz that's happening is sort of sowing this idea that Mario 64 is going to look any better than it did on the 64, which I just don't think is true. I don't think it's true at all.
Yeah, well, and my only reason for not believing in a sort of bundle is, you know, Nintendo, even, I mean, even with Twilight Princess, they sold that game for $40, which was to me the most underwhelming quote unquote remaster that I've ever seen. And, you know, it was $20 short of being a full priced game. I mean, and a lot of games on the Wii U at the time of that release were $50. So you could even argue that it's maybe was only $10 cheaper than it would have otherwise been. So it's just hard to imagine. I mean, like it sounds like an idea that makes sense, but just knowing that it's Nintendo, it that's what gives me pause.
Yeah, we'll have to see with that. The other part of that rumor is that we're going to get a 3D World port. That's going to happen. It's just a question of when rather than if. I'm all in for that. I'm always looking for another excuse to play through that game again. There's not enough co-op platformers, especially four-player ones, and especially ones that are taking place in a 3D space, not just side-scrolling. So I'm always down for that. The rumor is it's going to have more levels. I'm with it. Give me a couple new characters to mess around with. Give me Wario. Give him the shoulder bash. Give me Yoshi. He can flutter jump and eat. He'll be the game's easy mode character. Give me Donkey Kong. He can roll and pick up other people and throw them. I think that would be a really fun way to mix it up. You know, new characters, new stages, something like that. Just to sweeten the pot a little bit. It worked. The strategy worked really well for Mario Kart 8. It worked really well for re-releases such as Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Adding Funky to that was awesome. And so, you know, I hope that they do something like that for that release. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I just, you know, at this point, I'm entirely lukewarm on new versions of these games. You know, we're lucky enough to still have a copy of Sunshine between us, and we can pop it into the Wii. And we've got like you can buy like a $10 upscaler cord or like an M Classic, and, you know, get those to be running in a lot of prettier fashion. Playing them portably would be cool, but not something that I'm really itching to do. And, you know, I guess we did already get a portable version of Mario 64. It just played with a D-pad. but I wonder if they do something with Mario 64, are they going to give us the DS version as well that plays with an analog stick? Because that would be kind of awesome. That would get me excited, because that version had so many cool things, 30 extra stars to collect, the ability to play Yoshi, Luigi, and Wario. But then the controls are just so bad that it's really hard to enjoy over the original. So that would get me excited. But besides that, I'm not really, you know, I don't care for this, especially for the Galaxy functionality. I mean, like, I don't think they're going to do any more than they did with having that game run on the Wii U, which was just, you know, put it in widescreen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see. I would think my other reservation too is I just think, you know, I know that Nintendo's not afraid to release too many Mario games, but I also feel like that would reach the point of almost being oversaturated. You know, where you'd have Paper Mario, 3D World port, three other Mario games. Like, that's just, you know, that to me, that's just wild. You know, to think that there could be that many new Mario releases in a year, I mean, that would be crazy to me. So that's the other thing too, is I just feel like that even Nintendo, you know, I could see them not wanting to put out that many Mario games at exactly around the same time. So
that's another good point, because we've already got this Paper Mario thing hitting in the summer. They're probably not going to want anything else that's going on with Mario to hit until at least the fall. But then if your strategy is running all these ports, then 3D World doesn't really fit in there, and vice versa. So,
well, that's why
you could
I think,
have a point there. But that also just kind of does speak to the theory of it being included in a Super Mario All-Stars sort of package, because that would, you know, reduce the number of Mario games you're trying to cram into 1 year.
Yeah, well, I just think that's why, personally, I think you're going to get this Paper Mario release, and then that's in July. And then after that, you'll get the 3D World port probably around the holiday season. And, you know, that's all I really see happening, personally. Or maybe a new Mario title on top of that. Who knows? But I just think, you know, you're talking about five different games, even though it's really only three different games in terms of sales. But I just think, you know, Nintendo, you've even talked about this. That's the reason why sometimes they don't make sequels super fast, because they don't want them to compete with each other. And I think at the end of the day, you're going to have all this Mario content, and people might look at it as like, do I want three single player Mario games in a package, or do I want the co-op Mario port from the Wii U, or do I want Paper Mario, a brand new game? You know, and I just think it creates indecision as a customer, or a more casual customer, I would think.
Yeah, and you've noticed that there's big franchises in third-party senses where they release a new version of it every single year. You've got Assassin's Creed, you got Call of Duty, you got games functioning as a service, and you always have to wonder, why don't they do that with Mario? Why don't they just, you know, Galaxy 4, Galaxy 5, you know, just pack it on every year of the Wii's life cycle? And it's because these games will continue to sell through the entire system's life cycle. So the odds of us getting a Mario Odyssey 2, actually not super likely. I mean, there's not much of a reason to do that, because an Odyssey 2 might cannibalize on the sales of the first one. And you'll always notice with the sequels that they never sell as well as the first one did on the same system. You know, you can look at the numbers between Mario Galaxy and Galaxy 2. I haven't looked at those numbers in a long time, but I think it was like a 2-to-1 ratio in Galaxy's favor, because those games will just continue to sell at the end of the system's life cycle. And that's why they don't pack on too many mainline Mario games onto any system. And they, you know, they do instead, they opt for like, here's a Mario RPG and a Mario Tennis and a Mario Party to just create different versions of it. And, you know, you could also say for Mario Kart, I mean, they've been using the same game across two systems. And so, like, do they really have the motivation to make a sequel? I don't really think so. I think it would just kind of cannibalize the current sales. And that's what's got me, you know, not feeling too confident in a lot of this, because if they really were doing some big things with Mario, I would think the marketing cycle would be a little bit longer. And that's the big question here. Was this supposed to kick off in March and they release a bunch of ports of old Mario games in March and then have Paper Mario in the summer and a big Mario game or remaster of 3D World in the fall? I could have seen that, but you know, the whole schedule might have gotten pushed back by a quarter because of all this virus mess. And you know, we'll just have to see. Time will tell. But I do think that it's happening. I just think the way in which it's happening, we're getting bare minimum ports that make the games look okay in HD, but not as good if they actually tried to, like, you know, retouch all the textures and polygons.
Yeah,
like, well, they do in other ones. Like, you know, I think we're getting more of a you know, hey, look, this runs on the system, rather than even something as low hanging fruit as the Zelda remakes on 3DS.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say too, I think another example you left out was Twilight Princess versus Skyward Sword, you know, and that was on a really successful platform, just like, or same platform as the Galaxies, and seeing the drop off in sales between those two games. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thing, is I just think you put all these Mario games and cram them into a 5-month period before the end of the year. I mean, and that's that, you know, you would think that Nintendo has more to release than just a bunch of ports as well in Paper Mario. So then you've got other games too that they probably don't want to compete with each other. And so that's the way that I look at it. And I'm the same as you. That's why I don't automatically assume that Super Mario Odyssey 2 is in development. You know, the Nintendo's in-house studio was doing a bunch of hiring for different things. And you know, that's why some of the stuff I was hearing is that maybe it's a 3D Donkey Kong game or their take on it, because why release Odyssey 2 when Odyssey 1 is still selling like crazy, you know? And it just makes sense to, with a successful platform, to kind of go in a different direction. And so that's kind of my reason for it. But I mean, who knows? Maybe like the 3D World port will come out next year as a result of that, or the other port will come out next year, and that's how they space them out. So who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because so I just while you were talking, looked up Mario Galaxy 2. It sold 6.5 million copies Whereas, like, if we checked Mario Galaxy 1, that was, what's it called? I'm going to have 12, almost 13 million for Galaxy. Now, with those games, they have the chance to release another Mario game that might cannibalize the first one, although it is easier to make Galaxy 2 because you can port over a lot of the assets and, you know, make some of the ideas that hit the cutting room floor of the first one. You could also go into a different franchise, and that's where they've been, like, criminally underusing Donkey Kong. Where you look at the Wii example, they come out with Donkey Kong Country Returns and lean on that other, you know, fresh face for a mascot for, like, say, a holiday cycle. And they can, you know, they can bring in another, you know, 6.5 million copies sold, which is, you know, about the same as Galaxy 2. But, you know, how many copies did Galaxy 2 steal away from what could have just been Galaxy 1? It can't really answer that question without doing extensive research with polling people on, like, hey, did you buy both games? You know, I'm sure there's some crossover there, but that's what is weird about the franchises, the amount of franchises that they just let sleep for an entire console generation. You know, if I were them, I would just be trying to make a new version of every franchise every system cycle, and that way there's at least one of everything for the people that are looking for it. You're capitalizing on the people who are hungry for a Metroid or hungry for a Star Fox, hungry for a DK, and, you know, they just they leave a lot of those just to the wayside. And, you know, everything's kind of there's not the opportunity cost side of it that I'm explaining, but also the cost side from Nintendo's side, where they just don't know if after all their efforts of years of development, marketing, if the game's even going to hit after all that. But I'd say with certain franchises that they've tried to put a little more elbow grease into, like Fire Emblem, I mean, that's just a story that, like, you know, if Fire Emblem could do well, man, then you could make any of your other franchises work. I mean, Fire Emblem is one of the most niche and underappreciated franchises in the history of gaming that finally got its time in the light after Awakening, which was the game that they were going to cancel the series after. And, you know, you just see how that game could bounce back. And now Three Houses is probably on track to do over 3 million this system cycle. You're just like, man, what would a new Donkey Kong game do this system cycle? That'd probably break 10 mil. You know, especially if it was a 3D Donkey Kong game, something truly exciting.
But yeah,
we'll have to see.
Yeah, it would definitely. I think it would be on Mario Odyssey's level if they did something like that, like a big, expansive 3D world. But yeah, we'll just have to see. And you know, that's why I think I'm hoping that's what maybe some of those teases at the end of the Paper Mario trailer were hinting at. But who knows? Only time will tell.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to have a big holiday release this year? I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, like, I'm always kind of in the pessimistic camp with Nintendo that, like, I you know, I was making the joke before earlier, too, that I think they're kind of loving the fact that they can not be expected to release many games this year, because I don't think, you know, even with last year's E3, and if you look at just all the first party titles that have been launched on the Switch since the Switch came out, like, there's really not that many of them that aren't ports. And so I really think people have this idea that Nintendo's always working on a bunch of games, and I don't think they usually are. I don't think they usually have a ton of projects going on at the same time. And but the optimist in me would love to say that there would be some sort of holiday lineup, but the realistic part of me would probably say, you know, expect a port and some sort of major release, and that's probably it. but
yeah,
I don't think we're getting
a major release this year.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that just from a shareholder perspective. I think that would be a little troubling, but especially with how well the Switch is doing, it's almost like a missed opportunity. You know, and yeah, you see from the sales numbers of a lot of new titles or original Switch titles, that it's like, man, you know, this is the time to get games out because they're all selling like crazy. On the Switch.
I think we might get one, and I think the wheels are starting to turn on a strategy where Nintendo's pumping out more games and finding a better way to do it. They did it toward the end of the Wii U cycle, and definitely at the beginning of the Switches, where they had, they'll have Nintendo oversee Platinum making a Star Fox game. They'll have Intelligent Systems overseeing Koei Tecmo making a Fire Emblem game. And, you know, you can't look at Fire Emblem Three Houses and you know, tell me that's so vastly different than any other Fire Emblem game. It still has all the right pieces, all the character designs that you would expect, all the same Fire Emblem tropes with the weapon triangle and the map design. You know, it's still very much cut of the same cloth as the last few Fire Emblems, even though it was largely developed by a different company. And so I hope that they continue to lean on those strategies and get people making games that make sense. You know, get Sega to make another F-Zero game and just, like, you know, look it over and make sure that they're making it the right way and, you know, free up your main studios to do some other things. But as far as this year goes, I think just with the timing of all this stuff and just the nature of Nintendo's droughts that always seem to happen somewhere in the system's life cycle, I think what we're getting this year is we're getting Paper Mario in the summer. We're going to get this Super Mario All-Stars / 3D World Deluxe in the fall, and maybe Pikmin 3 Deluxe. And I think that's probably what's going to happen here. Pokemon's laying its bet on some DLC. Maybe we'll get another Pokemon spinoff, but I think that's what's going to round out this end of the year. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're pleasantly surprised by a lot of stuff that's coming out that's new. I mean, maybe they're working on something Splatoon related because they're all of a sudden bringing it Splatfest back out, but I think that's more so to promote Nintendo Switch Online than a possible sequel. But who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. But that's about all I got for you, Matthew. Any last words?
No, I would just say, like, if we went through the rest of the year getting nothing but ports and Paper Mario, that would be... I honestly, Nintendo doesn't surprise me a lot, but that would honestly shock me. You know, that'd be severely disappointing, to be honest. But, I guess we'll see.
We will see. According to them, they have more unannounced titles to announce this year. Of course, they don't. They will call a port a new game. And I mean, when your ports sell as well as Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I mean, you know, I don't know. I could see why they're dipping in that. I mean, you know, Tropical Freeze did better on the Switch than it did on the Wii U. And, you know, I think they're going to keep doing that. And I'm not mad about it. If they bring back these games and add enough, you know, give me a funky mode. Give me a couple new characters. Give me a few new levels. Like, you know, I'm okay with it. I'll revisit those. But I do get the hunger for something new. I mean, I would love nothing more than to get either an expansion pass of Odyssey, a DLC story mode for Super Smash Brothers. Like, there's other ways to slice this without making a necessarily new game. But, you know, I would like to be surprised as well. I'd love to see something new out of the Donkey Kong franchise. Something that bring that boy back into the third dimension. See what you can do, you know?
Yeah, well, even if it's a third-party title, like, there's a lot of rumors right now about Rayman making a resurgence in a lot of trademarks that have been filed recently that pertain to him possibly being included as a DLC fighter in Super Smash Bros., specifically one part of the patent being to be added to an online ongoing service. So that's starting to pick up a lot of steam, and Ubisoft's got an event coming up, and we know they have a great relationship with Nintendo now, with, you know, the Rabbids Mario game, with Starlink, with Star Fox, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, even if there was a new Rayman game coming out and you know, you get Rayman and Smash as well, like, that would be exciting. But it, like, even if it's something third party like that, I could see myself being satisfied. But, you know, if there's no big third party games coming out and then it's just a bunch of ports, like, that would just, you know, that'd be... Especially with how successful the Switch is doing, it just would feel like a huge missed opportunity. Like, I know it's doing well, but it's just, you know, this is the time to capitalize. And all their games that have released on it have seemed to do really, really well for the most part. You know, and so.
Yeah, it's a lot. But we'll have to see what happens. It'll be funny to come back to the show later on in the year and see if we were right or dead wrong. And, you know, maybe we'll come back and whoever got the year more right gets a prize or something. But we'll have to figure that out. But that's going to be the end of this episode of We the People. Thank you so much for listening in to this conversation. If you like the show, give us a favorable review on your podcast service of choice. And we'll see you next time with a little more Nintendo news.